you fall to the ground when you reach for the sky? Does the picture you have in your mind never turn out right? Are you living in style that you find that it leaves you cold?
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's conference call. Today is Monday, April 12, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find the banners on the right-hand side of our website, which the proceeds goes to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off 2 weeks ago. We're in the Gospel of John, we're in chapter 4. I'm going to pick up on chapter 5. So, the Gospel of John, chapter 5.
Chapter 5. After this there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool, but while I am coming another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward Jesus findeth him in the temple, and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed, and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus, and sought to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth, and he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. For as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son, that all men should honour the Son, even as they honour the Father. He that honoureth not the Son, honoureth not the Father which hath sent him. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word and believeth on him that sent me hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself, and hath given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Marvel not at this. For the hour is coming, in the which all that are in the graves shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. I can of mine own self do nothing. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that beareth witness of me, and I know that the witness which he witnesseth of me is true. Ye sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth. But I receive not testimony from man, but these things I say, that ye might be saved. He was a burning and a shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in his light. But I have greater witness than that of John. For the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works that I do, bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself which hath sent me hath borne witness of me. Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape, and ye have not his word abiding in you. For whom he hath sent, him ye believe not. Search the Scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. and ye will not come to me that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you, that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words?
Okay, tonight I'm gonna try to play a video. We'll see if it works. directly off of the computer here. We didn't upload this video, and it's terrible when we upload it. It's horrible to watch them, but hopefully this is going to work. They set this up, and this has been around a couple of months, I think, but I don't know that we've ever tried it yet, so this may be the first time. So let me see if I can get this going. Pretty short video. It's only about 8 minutes long. Let me see if I can find the buttons to get my audio coming from my computer. Okay, I think I found it. Share computer sound. Apply changes. Terry, you there? Or Jan?
Yes, there's a little switch that has to be said that...
Yeah, I already done that. I just want to let me know if I got a sound coming out. We're going to get started on that. You see the video, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, all right, this is the first time we're using this.
But for any eve of the 4th of July.
Do you hear that?
Yes.
Okay. This is Paul Harvey's rest
of the
story. I, Paul
Harvey, do herewith bequeath unto you something to remember. You may not be able to quote one line from the Declaration of Independence at this moment. Henceforth, you'll always be able to quote at least one line. To the last paragraph, where you will recall when I remind you, it says, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. In the Pennsylvania State House that's now called Independence Hall in Philadelphia, the best men from each of the colonies sat down together. This was a very fortunate hour in our nation's history, one of those rare occasions in the lives of men when we had greatness to spare. These were men of means, well-educated, 24 were lawyers and jurists, 9 were farmers, owners of large plantations. On June 11, a committee sat down to draw up a Declaration of Independence. We were going to tell the British fatherland, no more rule by redcoats. Below the dam of ruthless foreign rule, the stream of freedom was running shallow and muddy. We were going to light a fuse to dynamite that dam. This pact, as Burke later put it, was a partnership between the living and the dead and the yet unborn. There was no bigotry, there's no demagoguery in this group. All had shared hardship. Jefferson finished a draft of the document in 17 days. Congress adopted it in July, and so much is familiar history. But now, King George III had denounced all rebels in America as traitors. Punishment for treason was hanging. The names now so familiar to you from the several signatures on that Declaration of Independence. The names were kept secret for 6 months, for each knew the full meaning of that magnificent last paragraph in which his signature pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. 56 men placed their names beneath that pledge. 56 men knew when they signed that they were risking everything. They knew if they won this fight, the best they could expect would be years of hardship in a struggling nation. And if they lost, they'd fetch a hangman's rope. But they signed the pledge. And here is the documented fate of that gallant 56. Carter Braxton of Virginia, wealthy planter, trader, saw his ship swept from the seas. To pay his debt, he lost his home and all of his properties and died in rags. Thomas Lynch, Jr., who signed that pledge, was a third-generation rice grower, aristocrat, large plantation owner. After he signed, his health failed. His wife and he set out for France to regain his failing health. Their ship never got to France, was never heard from again. Thomas McKean of Delaware was so harassed by the enemy that he was forced to move his family 5 times in 5 months. He served in Congress without pay, his family in poverty and in hiding. Vandals looted the properties of Ellery and Clymer, and Paul and Gwinnett and Bolton and Hayward and Rutledge and Middleton. Thomas Nelson, Jr. of Virginia, raised $2 million on his own signature to provision our allies, the French fleet. After the war, he personally paid back the loans, wiped out his entire estate, and he was never reimbursed by his government. In the final battle for Yorktown, he, Nelson, urged General Washington to fire on his, Nelson's, own home, which was occupied by Cornwallis. It was destroyed. Thomas Nelson, Jr. had pledged his life, his fortune, and his sacred honor. The Hessians seized the home of Francis Hopkinson of New Jersey. Francis Lewis had his home and everything destroyed, his wife imprisoned. She died within a few months. Richard Stockton, who signed that declaration, was captured, mistreated, his health broken to the extent that he died at 51. His estate was pillaged. Thomas Hayward, Jr. was captured when Charleston fell. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside while she was dying. Their 13 children fled in all directions for their lives. His fields and grist mill were laid waste. For more than a year, he lived in forests and caves and returned home after the war to find his wife dead, his children gone, his properties gone. And he died a few weeks later of exhaustion and a broken heart. Lewis Morris saw his land destroyed, his family scattered. Philip Livingston died within a few months from the hardships of the war. John Hancock, history remembers best due to a quirk of fate rather than anything he stood for, that great sweeping signature attesting to his vanity, towers over the others. One of the wealthiest men in New England. And yet he stood outside Boston one terrible night of the war. And he said, "Burn Boston, though it makes John Hancock a beggar."
Did you stop it, John?
Of the 56 long to survive, 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes from Rhode Island to Charleston sacked, looted, occupied by the enemy, or burned. 2 lost their sons in the army. 1 had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 died in the war from its hardship or from its more merciful bullet. I don't know what impression you had of the men who met that summer in Philadelphia. But I think it's important that we remember this about them. They were not poor men. They were not wild-eyed pirates. These were men of means. They were rich men, most of them, and had enjoyed much ease and luxury in their personal living. Not hungry men. Certainly not terrorists, not irresponsible malcontents, not fanatical incendiaries. These men were prosperous men, wealthy landowners. They were substantially secure in their prosperity. They had everything to lose. But they considered liberty, and this is as much as I shall say it, they learned that liberty is so much more important than security. And they pledged their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor. And they fulfilled their pledge. They paid the price. And freedom was born.
We hold these truths to be so evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Okay. By the way, how did that come through? Did that come through okay? That was the first time I think we tried this.
It was pretty scratchy, John.
Horrible. It was like they were underwater, like Paul Harvey was underwater.
Well, that was all your fault.
Mine played perfectly, John.
All right. Well, anyway, hopefully everybody got the gist of that, you know. Look at our founding fathers. They gave up their lives, their fortunes. They gave up a lot. A lot of them did die. And I think he mentioned in there Jefferson. I don't recall, but Jefferson missed being captured by 5 minutes, I understand. But anyway, they gave up their lives, their fortunes, their way of life in order to bring themselves and their posterity liberty. You know, 4 years ago, if you asked me, are we going to face that kind of a challenge, I kind of thought we would. But of course, then we got some hope 4 years ago, and Donald Trump became president, and the things have changed. Everything has turned around. For us, it's our time to educate ourselves, our time to take back our republic, and it's up to the people to do that. We can at least do that. I don't think we're at a situation where we have to concern ourselves with losing our lives. But even if that is the case, then so be it. But, we have a lot of work to do, and we are organizing the nation. We do have all of these handbooks that we have written on our website. They can be found under People's Duty. I'm sharing my screen right now so you could see it. And down on the bottom, you can click on handbooks and get all the handbooks that we've written so far. We did, I did pretty much write and finish up the committee man handbook, which I haven't put up yet. I'm proofreading it right now. I got to send it over to Jan. He'll proofread it, and hopefully in the next few days it'll be up there. One of the things, or one of our plans that we're working on with the committee men, and we have to establish committee men in every single county, but we have to take back that's the only way we'll take back the political process. There is no other way, and so people must keep giving up their time and keep getting educated and prepare to do these things. And it's not that big of a thing, it's not that much time. With the committees of safety that we're working on to bring forward in every single county here in America, each one of those are going to be working on, getting the committee man process going within their counties. And, for instance, in my county here in Dutchess County, New York, we have 249 committee men. That's what's required in the Republican Party for the entire county. And we need to achieve those goals if possible. We only need 5 people elected in every single county to totally take back the Republican Party and or the Democrat Party. And I do believe we should take back both of them. We do have Democrats with us. We have people maybe that belong to other parties. They should consider leaving those parties and joining the Democrat Party for the sole purpose to take it back and bring it back under the Republic. Because it's up to the people to do this. No one else can do this. Donald Trump can't do this. The military can't do this. They can preserve this nation and give it back to the people, but it's up to the people to step up and take it and to take it back. And that takes our time and our effort. Once we get the committees of safety going, it's important that we meet at least once a month. That's 12 times a year. And that should go on permanently. I know our meetings used to go 2-3 hours max, but usually 2 hours. 2.5 sometimes. People end up staying back, and so you might spend 3 hours. So it's a nice social evening anyway. You get to communicate with a lot of people within your neighborhood, within your counties, your towns, and so on. But we need to start building these committees of safety. What I've come to realize, and it kind of dawned on me, is that we can take back the committeeman process without even being elected. And it's a pretty simple process to do. Keep in mind that we haven't found any elected committeemen yet in the United States. We've checked a lot of states. There are a few that are very close, but the way they still go through an approval process in order to be able to run for committeemen. If anybody's got to approve you, without, of course, running for committeemen, we all should know the Constitution. But clearly that is not there. Their goal is to discover people that know the Constitution. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite in that case of them and what they would like to see coming in, because they just want people that will do their will. We need to prepare and take back, and we could do exactly what they were doing. Hang on 1 second. I'm sorry. Right now, the committeeman is being, the committeeman positions have been taken over by people who have not even been elected. And what is it that the committeemen do? I mean, the main things that the committeemen do is they get people onto the ballot. And how do they get people onto the ballot? They do that by carrying their petitions. It's designating petitions. In order for an individual to get onto the ballot, the committeemen will walk their papers in all of these different election districts, and then they will get people onto the ballot by they have to get a certain number of signatures, and that way they can get onto the ballot. So we could do the same thing. We can act just like committeemen, just like they are, and we can carry petitions and put people into office that and make sure that they give us their oath that they will, honor their oath. And the other thing committeemen do or can do, a lot of them may not realize this because they very rarely do it. As a matter of fact, I've never seen the committeemen do this, but they can at will, and that is to recall anyone in office. There's a certain amount of signatures you need for the different offices and the number of votes that put them into office, and that's all calculated, but it's really laid out, generally speaking, within the election, election laws. But again, we can act as committeemen. But committeemen have a further reason to be. It's up to them to get to know the people within their neighborhoods, to invite them to a meeting so that they might become educated and involved in the liberty movement. If we, the people, do not educate ourselves and our children, and our neighbors, our friends, then we can't have liberty. As Jefferson said, if you expect to have a liberty, and if you expect to have liberty, you can't have it without an education. Of course, that's just a paraphrase of what he did say. So we have to educate ourselves and our neighbors, our friends, our families, our children. And we have to get involved. So we can use the Committee of Safety meetings on a monthly basis. And there would be updates, of course, that's necessary, because each Committee of Safety they have to have subcommittees. One subcommittee would be for the purpose of gathering together and getting people to become committee men. Another one to entice people to become to join the militia, and everyone should join the militia. And also another committee for the purpose of making sure that we get administrators for the juries within our county so we can take back our courts. But collectively, we can all work together until we get elected. You know, we've missed an opportunity this year, which was an odd year anyway, and it would be an uphill battle trying to run on an odd year, 2021. Committeemen run on even years. But if there are vacancies, they can run on odd years. But they won't acknowledge that there's vacancies. They control, both political parties control that process, so we're not going to be able to really, and well, we could do it and we could get the paperwork in, but it's too late. But we need to be prepared. You know, some states or counties, they'll run in January, some in February, some in March, and right up until May. So we have to hit that point, depending on what state you're in, be prepared to run for committeemen. But we can, again, we can act as committeemen. We can organize ourselves within our county and work, for instance, in New York is 62 counties. So we would communicate with 62 counties and the work we need to do to deal with people to get them into office so we get enough committeemen working and getting as many people into office that will honor their oath as possible. So we can accomplish those goals and we can do it as long as we get the committees of safety up. Next year, in 2022, we can run for committeemen. And we need to get bare minimum of five people in every county. We need a lot more than that. And again, we need everyone that's involved with the Committee of Safety to back up the committeemen as far as going out and getting signatures. We will train people on how to get signatures and what the proper way is to fill out these designating petitions. But everyone can do that. We do have to run for the committeemen, and we need at that point, of course, to walk our own petitions. At the same time, we'll be walking the petitions of the people that we would be supporting to bring them into office. And again, we would have the if we have enough people involved to get signatures to put them in office, we then will have enough people involved to be able to recall them and take them out of office should they not honor the oaths. And that's the power of the committeemen. But again, we need a bare minimum of five people in every county in order to take control of the parties. In theory, we can do five people per state, but that's an uphill battle, there definitely would be court battles involved in all this anyway, no matter how we go about it, because they will fight tooth and nail to try to keep their power. That would be the party bosses, of course. But once we get in, there are a lot of committeemen in there that have no clue what's really going on, and we can inform them of what's going on. We can teach them the Constitution and lay out the program that we put together and have them get involved in the committees of safety and as well as the committeemen process. But again, the committeemen are responsible not only to do these things and to educate people, but also to visit schools. We should be visiting schools within our counties and making sure that our schools are teaching a civics course and a constitutional course, one that's not written by bar attorneys, of course. We've written quite a bit, and we should try to get our courses into the schools. I got some ideas of some books for schools, but we'll look at and talk about that a little later, another time. But anyway, again, we can take back the political parties by next year. If people get involved and get their committees of safety going, everybody gets onto the same page. You know, each county has their own personal problems. The committees of safety also, once people find out that the committee of safety is there and they're having problems with maybe some bureaucrat or something, that they can come to the committee of safety and the committee of safety can solve their problems. Because, again, they'll be working with the committeemen, they'll be working with the administrators for the grand and petit juries, and, of course, building the militia. So we'd have a lot of clout and a lot of power over our elected individuals, especially local. And that's the key, is controlling everything locally. In order to control the state, you have to come together statewide. You know, for instance, again, 62 counties here in New York, We need majority of the counties working together to deal with state situations, state problems, to make sure we get a good governor into office and good senators. And at some point, of course, through the Republic Review that we're also working with, we need to correct the problems on the federal level where they think that they can write a 17th Amendment to move senators over to be elected by the people. Senators were there to represent the state, not the people. We have our own representatives. We have congressmen. They represent us. Senators, two senators every state, is to represent the state. And if they didn't steal that from us, we may not have been in as bad a shape as we are today. But nevertheless, we have to get rid of it. We've got to dump the 17th Amendment and turn that back to the states. Because right now the states are have no authority, have no vote in Congress. They're not sovereign anymore. They lost their sovereignty. And so have we, really. Many of us don't realize it. I know it. It's clear to me because I see it all day long, every day. I see it in the courts, what's going on. And clearly they have no concern for us or our Constitution. And Barack Obama, before he left office, he made a statement saying the end of the Republic never looked so good. And that's what he thought, and that's what he said. And he was thinking at that time, I believe, that Hillary would get in. But, of course, they got themselves a big surprise, and the tides changed. But, again, it's up to us to take this nation back. It's up to us to control the liberty and to have liberty for ourselves and our posterity. And if we don't step up to do it, then nobody else will, because someone else will fill these power voids. And we'll get party bosses back. We'll continue with all of the craziness with these two parties, and we'll just lose it again, and we'll have to repeat this again. Our children will have to repeat this again. And they may not be so blessed to have the opportunity to take their nation back. We have that opportunity today, right now, to take this nation back. We can do it if we stand up and take these positions. So I want to encourage every single person to get involved. And there is no excuse. Everyone needs to make time. We all have lives. We all have things we have to do. We have bills to pay. We have to go to work. We have families. We have friends. And we'd like to have a life and enjoy liberty. But you won't enjoy it very long if we don't secure it. But nevertheless, we have a duty. Everyone can give 2 or 3 hours a month going to a meeting. Everyone. Everyone can give a couple hours a week in educating yourself. Everyone can give a couple hours a week to come to a meeting like this on Monday night meetings so we can share information, learn things, and continue to grow and pass the information back and forth that we need. So anyway, to get a really, really, really good understanding of exactly how this plan is working, from the Committee of Safety all the way down into the militia, you want to look at these books, the handbooks that we've put up here. And again, as I said, there's one more handbook coming up. And actually, there'll be another one. I'm not sure. There'll be one on National Liberty Alliance. Those people involved with the leadership there will be putting a handbook together for us also. But the committee man handbook is pretty much done, like I said, and it'll probably be up by the end of the week. And people need to be reading all these things. We have a sheriff's handbook. Read the sheriff's handbook. We have the militia codes, rules, and resolutions, and read that. We've got the jurist handbook. We've got the Committee of Safety handbook. But I would start off with the Committee of Safety handbook because that is what everything pivots off of. You know, one of the mistakes we made early on is we stopped, talking about after our founding fathers have created this nation and put it together, somehow, somewhere along the line, the Committee of Safety ceased to continue operating. They should have been operating all the way through. They should continue because that's the connection between our government and the people, is that Committee of Safety. You know, there is political structure that we need to take back, so we need to take back that entire process. and make sure we put statesmen in there, people who know the Constitution, people who understand that if they do not uphold their vote, we are going to recall them. They need to understand that before they go into office. And with a phone call, we can correct any problem that they may, you know, come into a situation where they start to go off track, we can correct them. But then there's also the judicial process. If we don't save our courts, our nation will be as just as our courts. And right now, our courts are not just at all. Not at all. And we can see how now that Trump is out of office, we can see how the relationships are going with the nations again. We're going to be running into trouble. And, you know, we are not just a nation treating other nations justly. We are not doing that. But we can. That can only happen if we have just courts. Our nation will be as just as its courts, and our relationship with other nations will be just as our courts also, so as just as we are, that relationship. But again, it's up to us, we the people, it's up to us to educate ourselves and take on these positions and get involved. You must do it. There is no choice. Our founding fathers gave their lives, many of them gave their lives, horrible deaths. Hanging, it was worse than hanging. When they caught a traitor, they drawn and quartered them. Okay? Tied their arms and legs and pulled them apart with horses. Okay? That was the process. And then they hung them. Or maybe they hung them first and pulled them off before they died and then drawn and quartered them. I don't know. But either way, you know, these people were ruthless. They were evil. And that's the things that they faced. And with that, they still stood up for liberty to create this nation. We owe it to them as much as we owe it to our posterity and to our neighbors and our friends and ourselves. Okay, so the handbooks will be up hopefully this week. Now, on the book, I've had some communications with my publisher last week through email. I've sent everything into them they need. I'm waiting for the proper paperwork to come back to me so I can sign off on everything. So we're done with everything. They've got everything, and we've corrected all of their errors. We're just waiting for the corrections to come, and then, you know, I have to sign off on all these corrections. We are waiting for one other book review, and I notified them of that. It's only a couple paragraphs that someone's going to write that we're waiting on. And once that's done, then we're completely done. We have nothing else to give them. But I need to be, you know, signing off on all the rest of these things, the book cover, all the bio I wrote up, all of the book reviews, the acknowledgments, of course, the book itself, and some other things. But each one of those things have to be signed off on. So I'm anticipating that to happen hopefully before this week is out, and hopefully even you know, early in this week. You know, tomorrow's Tuesday, you know. I'm hoping to get a phone call from these people for them to deliver me these papers to sign so that we can get the book in print. They told me once all that's done, it's two to 3 weeks for it to come through print, you know, to get into printing. So it's very, very close, And we'll see what happens. We're planning on before the end of this month. We talked about that last month, that we're planning on the end of this month from some contact we've had. The book price is going to be $44. We'll be selling it online here on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, for $50, which will, of course, include shipping and handling. So we were charging $50. We dropped down to $48. Because we had word that it might go lower. Then we found out it was going to be higher, then we went back up to 50, and that's where we're going to leave it, because $6 for shipping and handling is about right. So that's where we'll be sending it out. Of course, you'll be able to go right to their website to buy it, but of course it's better to go through our website, because you know, we buy the books a little cheaper and make a few bucks extra. And, of course, we do have the shipping and handling to deal with, but nevertheless, it'll work a little cheaper out for everyone. We're hoping to get it into Barnes & Noble's, and we're looking to get a lot of, you know, interviews going up, not only for this book, but of course for National Liberty Alliance. And of course, the book is all about what National Liberty Alliance is doing anyway. So hopefully we'll get onto the bestsellers list and get these books out there to the general public on a larger scale. We'll see how that goes. I have a lot of faith and trust. I think the book is timely. It's right on time, in my opinion. I listen to different individuals speaking, to others, and maybe on YouTube. There's only a couple left on YouTube, but most of them are in other places. And they're all looking for something to do. You know, we need to do. Everybody got to get involved, but no one's saying what to do. Get involved with what? Do what? You know, we got to take this nation back. Well, how? How do you even take the nation back? Nobody seems to know. And it's been a long journey for us. It's been 20 years working on this because, until we found how we can save this nation, it took us quite a few years to come to the realization. When National Liberty Alliance was created, at that point in time, we understood what we had to do, you know, generally speaking anyway. We didn't have the clear picture, but we had a general picture of what needed to be done. We knew we had to take back the committee men. And it wasn't long after we started doing that we realized we need to take the courts back. And we need to do that first, we thought. But we don't have to take them back first. We can do both at the same time. We can get even if the committee men succeed before we take back the courts, if we organize the entire nation, we'd be unstoppable because of the process and the way things are. We can overtake the existing committee men that seem to be, well, they're still controlled by the status quo, by the party bosses. But we can take that all away from them. So anyway, everybody needs to get involved. I guess that's the bottom line here. Jan, do we have any questions this evening? Or any announcements? Jan?
He's working on getting his computer back.
I finally got unmuted. It does not respond tonight, John. We have one announcement first, and that we've repeated before. It's about the Red Pill Expo coming up in South Dakota, Rapid City. It'll be the weekend of June 5th and 6th, and there is a little gathering on Friday night, the 4th. There's lots of things to see other than the expo. We have Mount Rushmore, Crazy Horse, the Badlands. There's all sorts of things in that area for sightseeing before and after the expo. They've got a really good list of candidates or speakers presenting this year, as usual. And if you want information on it, just go to the redpillexpo.org. Click on it, and it'll bring up the whole list, and you can read what they're going to talk about and so on. If you can't make it, you can sign up for, I think, $30 last time, maybe $35, to have a live play of all of the speakers on the Tuesday. That's cheaper than driving out, but if anywhere near close, I would recommend you drive and enjoy the scenery and enjoy the expo. If you're going to go, would you please send me an email at jan@National Liberty Alliance. Now, we're trying to get enough members going so that we can get a table there and have a couple of our people, 3-4 of our people there, to talk to people that are coming to the expo. It's a great way to get some publicity, and if we can get enough people, we get a free table. So please, if you can at all make it, send me an email, and we'll put your name on the list. Other than that, John, I have just one question tonight, if you're ready.
Okay.
And this is pertinent for all COSs that are being formed throughout the country. It's simple, and it's going to come up for everybody that creates a COS. You get into passing the hat and taking small donations for things like the seal and other things. Maybe they have to pay a little bit for a room to meet in or something like that. So we have a treasurer. What should the treasurer do with that money? Should it be in a bank account? Should they just hold it what's the proper procedure here? Some people are even mentioning a 501c3, which would be a disaster. So what's the best way to handle this, John?
Well, we're not going to register with the government. We're not going to follow their procedures of fiction. We're just the people. I know when we collected money doing things, we just collected, you know, we'd pass the can around and people would throw money in and that money was accounted for and kept record of and someone held cash. We didn't use a bank. And I would suggest not using a bank. We're not looking at tremendous amount of money to begin with. We're looking for just, you know, basically, again, they could do dues also. But that's exactly what it's for, you know, to cover certain costs. You know, there's certain stationary costs, of course, that you have to pay for, ink, toner, getting a seal, and doing different things. One of the things that we'll talk about at a later time is suggesting that, you know, for instance, the state, the counties within a state should come together maybe once a year up in there, maybe, well, they could do it anywhere they want. They could do it, just come together like a picnic, and they can have all kinds of activities and, you know, target practice and all kinds of different things. So that's one thing. And, of course, that of course, could also turn out to be something that they can also collect more money for as people come to that, for that event. And, again, that goes into the kitty for the purpose of covering cost of things you want to do. I know we used to make signs and do different things some years back, especially in the Ron Paul movement, and that's where some of the money went to, making signs, and just various other tasks. You'll find out as people come together. But there's no reason to incorporate, last thing, the 501c3s, if that's proper, what the proper way to say that, I think that's what's called 501c3. Whatever it is, that has nothing to do with us. That's just something to really control the people by. And, you know, they use the idea of not having to pay taxes, you know, because you're a 501c3, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, but we're not going to deal with any of that. So, no, we're going to deal with that. Was that a two-part question, or did I get it all?
No, it was just, how do you handle the money? What do you do with it? Do you put it in the bank or just
put
hold
it in your pocket?
As long as you don't have a hole in your pocket.
There you go. Now, the treasurer would hold that monies and give an account of it. At every meeting, there's an accounting that comes, you know, how much was collected and how much is in the kitty. And maybe if they spent some money, what it was spent for, and they give it the tallies. And that's usually done in a written report and just the main amounts, you know, what was collected that day and what's left in the kitty and how much they spent. And then the details would be in a paper that everyone would get, and that is the job, of course, of the treasurer to make that accounting. And there's a secretary, of course, that they have a job to maintain all the paperwork and so on. So, all right, that was the only question, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the only one tonight, John.
Okay, sounds good. Is Berentia tonight?
I haven't seen him yet, but he could be.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
He is.
Okay, I see him just popped in. How you doing, Brent?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Yeah, how are you? We missed you last week.
Yeah, I missed me too.
Are you out in the weeds somewhere? You got back all right? We wondered, well, shoot, they just like, you and Gerard disappeared, you know. But
yeah,
you get
we were under a car, my car.
Oh, I see. At Gerard's.
And it just didn't want to work out easy. So.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, you're back now, and everything seems to be okay, right?
Tell the truth, John. Tell the truth. It was an alien abduction. It was an abduction.
I did let you go.
Yeah, you know, now be careful. You know,
the alien.
Yeah, people will really believe that stuff when you say it because they want to. It's fun, you know. Yeah. And you guys can play that up big and probably make a lot of money. But this is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com.
Let me give you a little intro and let me pass it.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
Are you ready to take the board here?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm passing the board over to you. Okay, this is Brent Alan Winters. He's going to talk to us for a while. He's the author of the book, The Excellence of the Common Law. and also The Militia of the Several States and some other books that he's also written. Brent, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. Gerard, you got the board.
Thank you, John. I just finished talking for an hour. On another interview, and all these people that I'm not aware of, and nobody has. I mean, there's NLA, and you listen to NLA, you know who NLA is, but there are a lot of other little groups out there that get together on the internet, and they want to know something. They want to know about the militia, and they want to know when it's all over, then they ask, well, then what do we do? Now what do we do? And people are committing treason. People are committing treason in the federal government. Why can't we do something to them? Why can't we arrest these congressmen that are voting for things that are unconstitutional? That's treason. Well, we got to talking about treason. And I said, well, let's back up here a little bit. Just go back to the fundamentals, which we repeat often. The Constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government, and it doesn't explain anything. It explains nothing. It just spits it out there on one piece of paper, and it says things, uses words and phrases that freight into the Constitution massive amounts of history and understanding and details. The words that are used freight in detail that isn't talked about. And so people want to know what the Constitution says. They have a deep inward desire to understand what it says, and so they go and they read it, and they try to read it, and they get past the preamble, and it starts getting kind of dry and boring to them. And the truth is, it is dry and boring, very dry and boring. And why is it dry and boring? Well, because it doesn't flesh anything out. It doesn't apply anything. It doesn't explain anything. And it wasn't intended to. And if you don't have a story to go with it, it's meaningless. You know, the Bible presents laws like statutes, and the commandments and judgments and the processes, and the book of Leviticus is about a lot of it about the priesthood, and the book of Numbers, and a lot of the sections of those books are hard reading. They're boring. Can you imagine sitting down and reading regulations all day and statutes? Well, maybe you've tried it. It's not fun. It's dry. And the Constitution is like that. And that's why so few people know so much about it. Truth is, it takes an incredible amount of discipline that can only be obtained over a long period of training oneself to sit down and focus and not be distracted. And not only that, it takes money, because you got to have enough money to spend your time sitting down and poring over what is otherwise boring stuff. And very few people have that. It not only takes time, it takes time to gain that kind of discipline, it takes money. You've got to have enough money while you're trying to discipline yourself to what looks like to other people non-productive activity to try to learn something about the Constitution. So what do we do? Well, I just make a suggestion, because it is important to know it, to know something about it. Of course, it's dry and dispirited, a dry and dispirited skeleton of words, as I say. And the reason is because it doesn't tell a story. And the reason it doesn't tell a story is because it wasn't intended to. But there is a story behind it. Why do you think that Paul Harvey got so well known telling the rest of the story? Well, he got well known because the stuff you see on the surface is awful dry and boring. What's the rest of the story? Well, the rest of the story is a story. It tells a story, and that particular story is lively, and it expands into a whole lot of stuff, and you can begin to read that story if you just read through the Declaration of 76. And for this reason, the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of 76 have traditionally been published together. because the Constitution by itself is dry and dispirited, and the story, which is a real story, a true story, something that really happened, it breathed life into the dry bones of the Constitution of the United States, the Declaration of 76. But even that is a short document, and when it says what it says, it refers to a whole lot of things that it doesn't explain either, and there's a story behind that, a story behind even the Declaration of 76, and behind the Declaration of 76 is a whole string of events and a struggle over a number of centuries in that island called England, Britain. And that story reaches back, and it has solid stepping stones of events that happen over and over and over again, and they're all fundamentally the same. And to have a bird's eye view of the sweep and the flow of that story as it unfolds, as the plates of it unfold, and it gets bigger and it gets wider as you're going down through history and stepping on those solid stepping stones of understanding, it leads up to the Constitution of the United States. And then the history of the United States after that is a history of attempted destruction of our Constitution. And once you see that that's not unusual, and you go back and you see that story in history unfolding, you say, well, it's always been this way. People hark back and try to reestablish our common law, the common law of government. That's what our Constitution is, a brief of common law government. Then you see our Constitution is a repeat of the same effort of Magna Carta. It was an attempt to reach back and reestablish our common law, which had been forgotten and abused. When we get to the laws of Edward the Confessor, back behind Magna Carta, there was an attempt to reach back and reestablish something that had been lost in our common law. And then the laws of King Alfred before that, those are just convenient handles. That was an attempt to reach back and reestablish what had been lost. And the covenants of Scotland, the covenanters of the 17th century, they attempted to reach back and recover what had been lost. And it's a never-ending concentric, the English Bill of Rights, 1628, which is fundamentally the same thing as our Bill of Rights. It was an attempt to reach back and reestablish what had been lost. And then the English went to war. The Parliament went to war with the Crown. They raised troops. They fought. They won. And as soon as they won, Parliament won on the right principles. Then, like a pig returns to the wallow, and like a dog returns to his own vomit, well, they returned right within weeks. They returned back to doing the same things they went to war with the Crown over, and thousands of people were killed. They went right back to doing the same old ugly, dirty things again. And it got so bad after the English Civil War that the Puritans fled to America by the hundreds of thousands to New England. And Oliver Cromwell was a Puritan, and he made preparations to leave for the New World. Something happened and he didn't leave, and they made him Lord Protector, and then he got mad that Parliament was doing the same things the Crown was doing. And then the colonies got stronger and stronger and stronger, and George Washington's grandfather fled to America. He was on the side of the Crown. He fled to Virginia. Well, they got over here, and then they got together, and they said, wait a minute, the Puritans, the sons of the Puritans that had fought with the Crown in England, and the sons of the Anglicans, and the people like George Washington, whose grandparents and parents fought on the side of the Crown, and the Puritans fought on the side of Parliament, they got together and said, now, wait a minute. They're doing the same things to us now that we were able to shed ourselves from and flee to the New World. Now they're trying to do it to us here. Parliament and the Crown together. So, former sons and grandsons of the supporters of the crown and former sons and grandsons of the supporter of Parliament got together, the people from New England and the people from Virginia, and then they drew all the others in from Pennsylvania and New Jersey and Georgia and the Carolinas, and they said, well, we got to do something because we've learned that we enjoy our common law here. We enjoy the right to remain silent. We enjoy innocent until proven guilty. We enjoy freedom of speech. We enjoy the right to keep and bear arms. We want our militias, and we want our freedom to contract. And so they got together, and they said to England, they wrote them a few letters, said, we want our common law freedoms, and you're trying to say that common law doesn't even apply here. That's what they said. Oh, there was one congressman that said the common law does apply in the Americas, and you fellow, one parliamentarian, and he said, no, you fellows are wrong. He stood up and made a speech. There's a town back in my neck of the woods and a county named after this fellow. I'm so used to the name that I don't realize, because I grew up with it, I don't realize that it makes people laugh when they hear it, and it almost sounds obscene. I'm going to say it. His name was Lord Effingham. Lord Effingham. And he's the one that supported the American colonies during our war with Britain to get away from them. And he got that county named after him and a town named after him. Well, here we are. And the Declaration of 76 was a complaint against all of the government, Parliament and the Crown, who had joined forces to abuse other people. We were supposed to be milking our cow and sending them the milk for nothing. That's really what it boiled down to. Hey, would you milk my cow and just send me the milk? Well, can I keep some? No, you can't keep any and drink it yourself. That's a violation of the Bible, too, isn't it? I mean, doesn't the Bible say that do not muzzle the ox that treads out the grain? Well, if the guy's working, let him enjoy the fruit of his labor a little bit. I mean, if you do it for an ox, by the way, we're commanded to do that. Not that we have oxen treading out grain, but the Bible does say, be kind to your beast, the life of your beast, and an evil man isn't. Well, we had a whole new idea. The people that supported the crown came to their senses and joined the Sons of Puritans. And they kicked back and said, no, we want our common law. Well, the Declaration of 76 is a brief of the story. A brief of that story. Now, the reason I'm telling you this is because I want you to get copies of the Declaration of 76 and the Constitution. And I don't want you to just get copies. I want you to get copies of them together in a booklet that meshes the two together and shows how they're interrelated. In other words, the things the Constitution mentions, you can go back to the Declaration of 76 and see, well, that's exactly what they complained in the Declaration of 76 about. And then there'll be a comment in this booklet about the Declaration of 76 and an outline of the Declaration of 76 in the front of the booklet, so you can see how the Declaration of 76 is the foundation. The real case in controversy, as our Constitution puts it, the real case in controversy, not a hypothetical, not some theory. You remember that story? This is in the beginning of this booklet. You can go to get this booklet at commonlawyer.com, and maybe it's someplace else. It's along with the militia of the several states. And in the front of that booklet, I tell the story about this judge that I read about, and he was about 41, 2, 3 years old, and he got to wondering. He lived back in the 1800s, 1840 or something. He got to wondering how this group of farmers, underfed, underpaid, not paid at all, undertrained, no uniforms, farmers and craftsmen, men, working men, how they were able to defeat the most highly trained, best equipped, best fed military forces in that day, namely British Redcoats and Hessian troops. They defeated them. They did. How'd they do it? So he knew that some of these old fellows that had been in the militia of the 13 original states were still alive, and he sought out this old fellow by the name of Captain Preston. His name was Preston. He was captain at, I believe it was Lexington. You know, there was the battles of Lexington and Concord. Well, I'll have to look. But he was there. He was the guy in charge of the militia and the Minutemen. And this judge, who was 40-some years old, asked this old militiaman who was in his 90s, I think he was 91. He said, "Were you oppressed by intolerable oppressions?" And the old man said, "Huh." He said, "Oppressions? I didn't feel any." He said, "Well, what? Weren't you oppressed by the Stamp Act?" He said, "I never saw one of those stamps. I certainly never paid a penny for one." He said, "Well, what about the tea tax?" He said, "Tea tax?" He said, "I never drank a drop of the stuff. The boys threw it all overboard." He thought, well, maybe this guy's a philosopher, an intellectual. He said, "Well, I suppose then you'd been reading Harrington and Sidney and Locke about the eternal principles of liberty." He said, "I never heard of them." He said, "We read only the Bible, the Catechism, Watts' Psalms and Hymns, and the Almanac." He said, "Well, what was the matter then? What did you mean in going to the fight?" He said, "Young man, what we meant in going for those redcoats was this. We had always governed ourselves, and we always meant to. They didn't mean that we should." Well, that's it. We had always governed ourselves, and we always meant to. You know, you get to asking people why they risked their lives, died, bled, killed other people, which is an ultimate experience. Present yourself for death and kill other people. Friends, that's religious. You get down to that kind of stuff, you're talking about religious convictions. I don't care what men call them. War is a religious activity. I was listening today to the testimonies of the German boys that were on the coast of France when the Allies invaded. The testimonies, oh yeah, they interviewed them. In their later years, some of them described what they did. These fellows said, well, one said, "I was there, I'd been wounded in Italy, I had a terrible limp, but I could man a gun, so they put me to man in this gun." And he said, "I really believed," and he said, it was a good belief, "that our job as German soldiers was to defeat Russian communism, and we knew France was capitulating to communism. We had to get through France, take control, defeat Russia, and if somebody was going to try to kill us, we didn't have any choice but try to defend the homeland, the fatherland," as they said. Well, he was a sincere young fellow, very sincere. When men fight, they're sincere, whether you think they're right or wrong. Men kill and are killed for deeply religious reasons that go back to the land and defending the land in many cases, and that's a noble idea, whether they're right or wrong. And that's what this was here in America. It was a ultimate terminal conviction. And governments will work men up to those kind of convictions falsely, by the way, knowing of their sincerity, knowing if they can lie to them, they'll believe it. Has that gone on in our country? You bet it has. A lot. In various ways. Going way back. But you ask the boots on the ground why they're doing what they're doing, and they'll be sincere and they'll believe they're right. And they'll have right ideas in their heads, even if they're wrong, they're sincere about it. Well, in this case, the men were sincere, and they didn't want to fight, and they didn't attack Britain. They just waited and said, well, we're going to do this, you come after us, and here we are. Are there any lessons in that? Yeah, there are lessons in it. And there's nothing about going to war in the Declaration of 76. Nothing, no saber rattling, none of that. Not really, no. They're just saying, we're just going to do what we think's right, and here's what we need to do today. Somebody asked me on this last presentation, what do we need to do? I said, well, well, what's going to happen in the future in 5 or 10 years, the fellow said to me, and I want you to tell me what you think is going to happen. I said, I'm not a prophet. And the Bible says anybody who claims to be a prophet, that they're wrong, if they're wrong at even one point, you're supposed to stone them to death. I'm not going to take that chance. I'm no prophet. I don't know why people claim they're prophets. That's silly. I'm no prophet. But I am a predictor of probabilities. And the probabilities are this. We're in trouble. We have gotten the government we deserve. We have gotten the bozos. Yeah, they're just animals. They're like unreasoning beasts in office. What do you mean we deserve it? Well, we're the ones that have been tolerating this silently. Did you know that the evil empire is not even talking about tolerance? They're not even demanding tolerance anymore. That was the byword for a long, long time. We must be tolerant. Well, that wasn't true. We needn't be tolerant to lawlessness, but that's what they were saying. Now they're saying, more than that, you must have empathy, not sympathy. Oh, they're very careful about what they say. You must have empathy. Yeah, for people who want to sodomize men and little children, oh, you must have empathy. Well, I hope that your eye doesn't pity. No, we mustn't have empathy for those who would destroy children and abuse women. Not to mention men. That's what sodomy is. Abuse of mankind. Well, we have to start with women and children. We don't want to abuse them. I find it fascinating, the more screaming there is for the rights of children, yeah, the rights of children and women, the more abuse there is. We've never had this much abuse. Well, it's always been around. Not like this. What do we need? We need fundamentals. We need to get back to the basics. What are the basics? The laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. Seek and ye shall find. Keep on seeking, keep on knocking, it shall be opened unto you. This is the message we made last time, time before. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, and you can join us on Patriot Soapbox along with Gerard. I believe you're on Wednesdays, aren't you, Gerard? Well, I think it's Wednesdays. He can correct me later. I'll bring it up again if he doesn't say anything about it.
No, he is on Wednesday.
Wednesday, yeah. And yours truly is on Saturday and Sunday morning. So if you want to know more about the research Gerard's doing, I suggest you tune in. He does a lot of research. He can tell you what's coming up next. Matter of fact, I thought Gerard was going to play some movie for us or some documentary or clip today. Is that true? Silence on the other end.
Oh, he'll be here in a second.
I'm here. I got Ollie screaming in one ear and trying to listen to Brent out of the other ear.
Yeah, I get it. Well, were you going to play? I heard you're going to play some kind of a documentary or a clip. Is that true?
Yeah, this coming Wednesday, yes.
Oh, not tonight, though.
Oh, I don't know. I do have a piece of something I can play, but I'm not sure how to do that on this venue.
Okay, we're good.
I mean, I don't know if I share my screen if the sound will come out, because all I need is the sound.
You know, Ollie, you and me are like about that. I have
you know, but go okay. Ahead.
It didn't look at you a little late, Gerard. I played one, and it didn't work out very well.
That's what I thought. That's why I didn't say anything about it, because I figured it was going to flop anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
So Brent says.
I mean, I got something. I got something really exciting, but I don't know how we can bring it out.
You have to download it and then upload it, and even that is a problem. But so that was the broadcast.
Well, we can.
But just trying to share your computer audio was horrible.
Right.
So then we can build the suspense now for Wednesday, right?
Well, hey John, can I just run a video on here? You could show a video, right?
Yeah, you could show the video, but the sound, you got to come through your computer, and there's a button to click on, but it didn't work out. We did that earlier. I played an 8-minute clip, and I was told it was horrible. I mean, it sounded okay on my end. There was a section that didn't sound good, but I was told that it didn't turn out good.
Well, that's a shame. This thing should be an elementary thing. I mean, look, we got videos up on Video Sanctuary that we can play and all kinds of stuff. I don't know why this thing won't bring the sound across. You know.
They have bad. Look, they have bad. The people who are the technicians that created this and maintain it and do the updates, they're horrible. I don't think they know what they're doing, to be honest with you.
Well, they're probably all from China or Korea. Who knows? Yeah. It's a conspiracy, I'm sure of it. But anyway, I'll let Brent finish up here.
I finished, Gerard.
Okay, so then we've got to go to questions. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. And there's a lot of groups coming together. Well, I don't know if they're coming together, but they're coming to certain conclusions that basically have the same, they're going to have the same result, because they serve the purpose of being that domino that wakes everybody up. And I'm telling you right now that the cabal and the higher politicians that understand this game they're playing with us are terrified that this truth is going to come out, and that people are going to realize the fraud of the fiction that they've put on us since the beginning of this country, practically. You know, because it's been there forever. I mean, even during Washington's day, they were in there doing stuff. And a matter of fact, there's another guy that spent a lot of money on getting oaths of office and different things, and he's of the opinion that Washington was his first term was the only real legal president we had. He said because they took men that had allegiances to England or had oaths to the bar, and if you got sworn, Washington got sworn in by a lawyer, a bar lawyer, and he said that's not valid. So technically, he wasn't really a valid president during his second term. So I don't know that I take it that far, but what they're doing today is, just like they denied all these people like Giuliani and President Trump himself not to hear the case due to standing. That's ridiculous. And Trump just put out a statement about that tonight, and he said they're going to reap what they sowed. He said that court was a conservative court, and their biggest fear is these liberal Democrat politicians. He said, wait till the lower courts start operating. He said they're going to reap what they sow. And you should see the statement that he wrote. It's very prophetic and very scary.
Where is it, Gerard? How do we find it?
It's actually, I got it on the Populist Press, but it's on the Real Donald Trump Telegram channel.
How long is it?
It's not that long. He just released it tonight. You have to read it slow. Actually, I have it. I'll read it if you want.
Yeah, I want you to read it.
Hang on, let me see. I think I still... Do I still have it up? I think I closed it. Hang on, I have to go on my Telegram. Hang on, just bear with me a minute.
That's big news, Gerard. Well, no, I'm anxious to hear it. I didn't know he'd made it. I'm surprised.
Yeah, it came out. It popped across my screen last minute. And it is hot off the press.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the Real Donald Trump. Let me see. And it's on. Hang on just a minute. Let me type it in. It seems to me.
Well, I bet there are a lot of people trying to look it up as you talk. I probably ought to be trying to do it too, and I could.
Hang on a minute.
Is that the one that starts, wouldn't it be ironic if the
Yes,
Supreme
yes, yes.
I've got it here if you want me to read it, or you can continue.
Hang on just a minute, Real. Let me see if I can get it. I'm up.
Where'd you find it, Terry?
What's the website, Terry?
Not a website. It's Real Donald Trump and Telegram. So I pulled up Telegram.
At Real Donald Trump, right. Yeah, I got it. Statement by Donald Trump, 45th president of the United States. You know, he's running that office out there, Donald Trump, 45th president, and he's using it as his bully pulpit. And he's doing pretty good with it, actually. He's actually getting more news out than he did when he was president. Because they can't censor his stuff, you know, and it just gets out there now. So you have to, you'll probably want to read this more than once when you get it, because it's kind of like twisted in what he's saying. But I'm going to go ahead and read it slowly. Wouldn't it be ironic if the Supreme Court of the United States, after showing that they don't have the courage to do what they should have done on the great presidential election fraud of 2020, was packed by the same people, the radical left Democrats, who they are so afraid of. And he's got packed in capital letters. So the great presidential election fraud of 2020 was packed by the same people, the radical left Democrats, the radical left Democrats, who they are so afraid of, that they so pathetically defended in not hearing the election fraud case. Now, there's a very good chance they will be deluded and moved throughout the court system so that they can see how the lower courts work, with many new justices added to the court, far more than has been reported. There's a good chance that they will be term limited. We had 19 states go before the Supreme Court who were shockingly not allowed to be heard. Believe it or not, the President of the United States was not allowed to be heard based on, quote-unquote, no standing, not based on facts. The court wouldn't rule on the merits of the great election fraud, including the fact that local politicians and judges, not state legislators, made major changes to the election, which is in total violations of the United States Constitution. Our politically correct Supreme Court will get what they deserve. An unconstitutionally elected group of radical left Democrats who are destroying our country with leaders like Mitch McConnell, they are helpless to fight. He didn't fight for the presidency, and he won't fight for the court. If and when this happens, I hope the justices remember the day that they didn't have the courage to do the work that they should have done for America. That's a very, I don't know what you want to call it. It's prophetic, and it's scary in a certain sense. He's tolling the bell of what's going to come down in the future with these radical Democrats who are basically, well, as far as I'm concerned, they're all committing treason. I think we can all agree on that. And like you said, so what do we do about it? So I think there's things in plan to take care of that. But my thing is that Donald Trump and whoever's working with him, whether it's the military intelligence, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's the office of president, and you know, the Supreme Court's not the supreme ruler of the land, and neither is the Congress and the Senate. If the Supreme Court and the executive branch and the military don't agree with each other, it's up to the Supreme Court. Now, any one of those branches of government could have brought the fraud to light and fought it and declared the election a fraud, or could have put it back to Donald Trump, who they know for a fact won. All the evidence in the forensics is there. It's little more than not even a doubt anymore that it was fraud, and they know exactly the numbers because they know how they did it, and they have everything recorded. So it wouldn't take much to throw those votes out and declare Trump the winner, but they're all afraid to because, you know, this is a global thing. Because Trump was taking down the corporations that are running the world. He was taking down the Rothschilds and the cabal and the drug runners and the child traffickers. He's basically scratching at their eyeball, and they will do anything to stop him. So he's doing what he can do, but basically the military, well, the story is that they don't agree that Trump is not president, and that they are behind the scenes, that when he left, he did sign the Insurrection Act. Well, I haven't seen it. Nobody's seen it, but it certainly looked, there's something strange. You don't see Biden in the White House ever. It looks like they're using CGI for him, you know, whenever he's got to do a speech or something. And they got strange backgrounds that it's been claimed comes from Castle Rock movies that, and all this stuff that everybody says, it's conspiracy theory. Every day, it looks more and more like that's exactly what's going on. So you got to ask yourself, and the White House looks like a ghost town. You know, there's nobody there. But nevertheless, if the military's in control and Trump stepped aside, as he should have, because he couldn't do this himself because he's got kind of a conflict here. So if the military believes that the country is under attack by forces foreign and domestic, which we are. We have more Chinese in this country, and we have more China influence. They've bought off almost every governor, and these big corporations have rooted themselves to undermine our freedom. And so it's really, the military is like the last stand. And they can take up, and they can actually take over things and put us under military rule. Well, they didn't want to do that. That's why they convinced Trump to run. So without getting too long with it, which I already have, basically what I can see here is if the military steps in and tries to bring back the rule of law, which I believe they will, they have more evidence on all these people. Not only do they have evidence of treason, they're all wrapped up in pedophilia problems. They're all wrapped up in murder and drugs and all this stuff. So if they just attack them on that level of the felonies that they've committed against people worldwide, we would lose almost our whole Congress and Senate. There'd be a skeleton crew. I don't think there'd be 20 left in either house. And so what that's going to do, and I think that's going to happen. So there's going to be a vacuum. And Trump and the military can only do what the Trump and the military can do. The big problem is going to be what we do in our counties to restore constitutional government. That's where we need to step up to the plate. Because if we don't do that, our second condition will be maybe even worse than the first one. Because if we can't run our counties as constitutional republics under the rule of law and put to bed this sham corporation that has us paying income taxes and taking all our rights away that was never meant to be, and abusing us as chattel, we're never going to be free. This is our chance now. So Trump has brought the top down, so to speak. He's attacked the top, which is the Congress and the Senate and the courts. It's up to us to bring the bottom up. It's up to us to go into our counties and our towns. And make no mistake about it, the Chinese and George Soros have reached right into our towns and our counties. And we have direct evidence of that, that they've been buying people, and even into our institutions, you know, our higher learning institutions. As a matter of fact, this virus was originally funded and made by the WHO and Fauci in institutions such as the University of North Carolina and places where they had these level 3 bio labs, which they weren't even supposed to have because they were outlawed sometime in the Obama administration. And when they found out that they had them, they were ordered to close them. So what did our great Fauci do? Because he was the head of the infectious disease department there, and he had money at his disposal, he sent $3 million over to Wuhan, China, and the two Chinese scientists that were operating out of that lab and making this stuff, he sent them back to China with the progress on the virus that they had made so far. So basically, this virus was funded and paid for by Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, and the big pharma corporations. And that's a fact. These are all traceable and verifiable facts. Anthony Fauci should not be sitting in there. He should be hanging from a rope right now. Because what he's done to America is disgusting, and we're going to pay for it for a long, long time. And my biggest fear is that they've released this virus and this vaccine, which from what my research tells me is this vaccine is a Trojan horse, that it's DNA altering, and that you can never get rid of it. And what it does is it replaces your nonspecific antibodies that we're born with, that God gave us, that will attack anything that comes in your body, and it replaced it with specific antibodies to the Corona 19 virus. Now, the Corona 19 virus is nothing more than another influenza A, influenza B. Every year they come out with a flu shot. Well, there's 7 or 8 different mutations of the flu. They never really know if it's going to work because they don't know which one's going to be prevalent that year. So they give these flu shots, which I wouldn't take one. I don't trust any of it. And this new vaccine is an RNA replicating vaccine that writes into your DNA. They've never, ever had a vaccine like this. And it's not a vaccine. Calling it a vaccine is a misnomer because it's not. And when they tried to make it for the coronaviruses, every time they went into the animal testing, then they used cats and ferrets for this particular virus because they're susceptible to this cardiopulmonary disease of COVID and SARS, just like the humans are. So they're the best test subject. They could never get past it because even if they survived the initial two vaccinations, as soon as the wild form came up in the public and those people caught it, they had an immune system response that was a storm that would kill them. They would all die of cardiopulmonary disease. And basically, the way this thing works is they put this DNA in your body, this RNA, which is a messenger RNA that tells the DNA what to do, and it produces the protein that is the virus, which they don't even know what it is because they never even isolated it. So then the theory is that your body will produce these antibodies against it, and that's what the vaccine does. It gives you vaccines against COVID-19, but they'll only fight COVID-19. That's it. That's what they're looking for, and they're very robust. And so I want to tell you that any time that you make the body produce something that the body has to fight, that's the definition of autoimmune disease. That's cancer. That's leukemia. That's all these autoimmune. So what they did is they gave us a virus that's basically going to cause autoimmune disease in your system. And they've never done it successfully. And any time they tested, all the test subject died. So this time they said, oh, it's an emergency. We can release it without testing. Biggest fraud. And they knew what was going to happen. So now all these people that are dutifully taking their vaccinations and saying, well, I want to travel and I want to do this. And I've told people and showed them the evidence. And Del Bigtree has one of the top virologists has blown the whistle and said that you cannot give this vaccine during a pandemic because it's going to create mutation and viral shedding. We're going to have such a die-off in the next 2 years. Look, they already have 100 million people vaccinated. How many million people in America? 350 million? So basically, we're going to lose over us. It's going to be more than that because not just the people that had the vaccine are going to die. They're going to shed this new mutation onto people that haven't been vaccinated. See, before they gave us the vaccination, your system could handle this virus unless you were elderly and you had co-committing problems like heart disease and diabetes or so other autoimmune diseases. It was a 97.9% chance of survival. And the younger you go, the higher the rate was. So it was a farce. It was the emperor has no clothes that they pulled on us, and they locked us up and ruined our businesses, and now they got us taking this vaccine that's going to cause a new pandemic, and what they're going to say is, oh, it's another strain that came. We told you to wear your mask, and you didn't stay inside long enough. It's a lie from hell. But this is the nightmare that we have to go through, and we have to do it at a time when our military and our country is the lowest it's ever been as far as patriotism, as far as understanding the Constitution. We are in very, very severe and dire straits. And really, the only thing that's going to save us is if you get down on your knees and God does a miracle and somehow we get through this. I mean, the truth is out there now and people are starting to wake up. I don't know if it's going to be too little too late, but I'm telling you, we're on life support right now with this country and what's going on. Even if Trump has a great victory, just cleaning up the garbage that they left for us to deal with is going to be a miracle to do. So, I don't know. You know, they want to push more vaccines. I wouldn't touch it. Because it completely ruins your system as far as it replaces your non-specific antibodies with COVID-specific antibodies, which means that anything else comes in your body, your normal immune system can't respond to it because this acquired immune system gets in the way and blocks it. And it's a horrible, if you understand the operation of this thing, it truly is a Trojan horse. And so we may be getting, and the funny thing is that, God comes through when men get crazy and they start messing around with their DNA and they start doing things that are subhuman. Look, he destroyed the world once. Why do you think he did that? Who knows what they were doing in those days? They have found skeletons that were beyond the Egyptian years, with holes in their heads healed over, which proves that they were doing brain surgery during those days. We think that they were backwards. They weren't backwards. They were probably ahead of who we were, even. Like Solomon says, there's been civilizations that have come and gone that we know nothing about. And I believe that they got into a point where they were ruining the DNA of man, and he had to destroy everything in order to save the race. Well, guess what? There's a lot of DNA that's going to die, and I think that what you're going to see is the people that believe everything that the government says, and they're sheeple, and they follow the government in spite of knowing that there's all this immoral stuff going on. Well, guess what? They're going to all have their genes removed from the gene pool now, aren't they? This is kind of a punishment from God for people not having discernment to keep a tight control on their governments and on their corporations and on their entertainment and everything they do, all the brainwashing. So, and it says in the Bible, if you take the mark of the beast, you will not enter heaven. I understand why now. Because when you take this new vaccine, you become part AI. That DNA, that thing that makes you produce the protein, you can't get rid of it. And it's programmable through 5G, and that's one of the reasons they want to put 5Gs all over, because they can activate and deactivate this thing through the internet. So I'm on a show. So what happens when you take it, you're not in the image and likeness of God anymore. You've altered your DNA, and when you go there, he's not going to recognize you. This is my opinion. This is my theory, but every day that I see it, it seems to be, to me, to have more and more credibility when you look at what's going on in the world. It's a scary scenario, but, it's where we are, and I'm going to stop now. You need to do your own investigation, because all this information's out there, and if you look up Del Bigtree, he has the scientists that work for Novartis and all these big companies, and he's the one blowing the whistle saying that this thing is going to create the biggest pandemic you ever saw. And he says, it works really good on COVID. It's a good vaccine, except for one thing. Once you take it, you can't fight any other virus. He has to be very careful what he says, this guy, because he works for all these big companies. And in that one interview with Del Bigtree, where he reveals what he's blowing the whistle at, because he understands that this is a death sentence for the world, he's very careful even in that. But he basically says enough that you understand that this new vaccine should have never been released, and that's one of their own people. So that's not me. Anyway, we got other things. I'm going to stop now and go on to some of the questions that we got here. Okay. We have Kevin from New York. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. I'm still waiting for the book to be issued, and still haven't received it. It's been quite a few months. I know
it's a long process, and it's very close, because I just handed John my blurb that I was to put in the cover, for a comment on a book review. And he just got, I just gave him mine here last week. So that's the last couple things that needed to be done. I don't know if John's still listening, but I know that we are probably, you know, just a couple of weeks away from having the thing printed. That's
yeah,
what
I
mean.
I made a report on that earlier on when I started the program, and I'm waiting for all the paperwork to do the sign-off, and then once it's all final sign-off, it would get to print within 3 weeks. So it could be 2 weeks or 3 weeks once I get all the sign-offs. So I'm waiting for them to send me the sign-offs. And then I just got one other review that's coming through, but that's going to be a paragraph or two. It shouldn't hold nothing up.
Okay, so roughly 2 or 3 weeks. Good enough, John. I'm looking forward to getting that book. It's something I've been holding off there for a couple months now, and I really would like to see it. Thank you very much.
I'd like to see it, too. And by the way, anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1, queue's open. There's only got a couple people there, star 6 and a 1.
Okay, I'll go to the next guy here. It's Kevin from Queens. My daughter's asking me, what if they vaccinate you and you don't know it? Are you still going to go to hell? I said, oh, boy, did I open a can of worms. Anyway.
It's still Kevin. You've answered my question. You can go on to the next person. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. It says, oh, it switched it up on me. It's Tizoc from Chicago, Illinois. Are you there?
Can you hear me now?
I can now.
Hi. My name is Tizoc or Tizoc. I'm out of Chicago. A pleasure to hear you guys every Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of, an overwhelming points of agreement, which of course we probably won't have time for. I guess I don't really want to start off by disagreeing with any points, but I don't know if you guys have heard of some criticisms of viral contagion,
mm-hmm.
as in like germ theory not being holding water.
Oh, I have.
So
absolutely.
You know, I try not to use. Building on that, I saw a video from Children's Health Defense, mm-hmm. which I've been. I guess I'm considered like a friend of or within arm's reach of that group mm-hmm. in Illinois. They have a video where they define medically what a vaccine is, having five elements. And the injection that they give us for the C-19, supposedly, and I
yeah, it's not a vaccine. It doesn't fit any of the protocol.
Right. So
what a vaccine is.
Right. So I would encourage us to stick with appropriate language and not call it something that it isn't. That would color it in a better light, right? Because if we call it a vaccine, then we're assigning these five elements. Include one of which is, I believe, the development of antibodies, which, you know, I don't think it actually does. And
it does put an antibody against the COVID-19, but that's all it will go after. And it's so robust, it blocks out your innate immune system, gets in the way of your non-specific antibodies, which God gave us, which will attack anything that comes in. And now that takes that system and takes it offline. So unless you get COVID-19 in your system, you're going to die.
So COVID-19 is not defined, right?
No, it's really not defined, to tell you the truth. Well, the COVID that they were telling us was COVID-19 was basically just another variation of the common flu. It was the same as influenza A, B, or you could have called it C. It wasn't the pandemic that they made it out to be, but they drove the debts up and they ran this thing on us because the ultimate thing was to get us all on this tracking and tracing and this whole, you know, it's part of their scam to get us all under control and restrict our travel and know where we are, because they're going to come out with, you know, tracking devices in your cell phone and everything else to know where you've been and who you've been with, and they're going to isolate you, and we're going to have a social credit system just like China. If you talk against the therapy, the so-called vaccine, which is basically an experimental gene therapy, which I wouldn't even call it therapy. It's the experiment, basically. So, and you know, as far as the whole virus thing is, you know, the germ theory with viruses, what they discovered, and I'll put this out there, you probably know it, is that they look at the bloodstream and they see these cells throwing off these exosomes, which is the cell, which happens is when this foreign protein gets in the cell coats it and spits it out into in this, I don't know what you call it, but it's a ball of the protein, and you exhale it. Well, that is the body healing itself. That is not the virus itself. That is the result of the virus. Just like the doctors, these allopathic doctors do, they're always treating the effect instead of the cause.
The symptoms.
The
right.
Symptoms. That's right. So these exosomes are not viruses. They're actually what they are is they're natural vaccines for you and me. So if I get, let's say I get a flu, and my cells throw off exosomes, and I exhale them, and you come in and you inhale my exosomes. Now that is the virus that went through my body already, and my cells partially killed it, and I exhaled it. Well, when you take it in like that, guess what? It's weakened. It's a vaccine. Because it goes in your body weakened, and that's how you get herd immunity. And that's what they've lied to us about. We should be breathing those things in, not putting a mask on our face to stop them.
I definitely have some different understandings. Mm-hmm. I think you were speaking about maybe terrain theory and other competing theories to germ theory, right? Mm-hmm. Others that are not focused on by allopathic medicine.
Right.
So there's much better sources. I'm not... You know, an MD, and I am not particularly...
No, and neither am I. I mean, I know just enough to make me dangerous, I tell her.
Well, you know, an MD's, the parallel would be an attorney, right?
Right.
Attorney. So, and neither have I spent 10-plus years delving into naturopathic or other, you know, remedies. However, in the last year I have been, and for sources, you know, other outside of ourselves, you know, one of our contemporaries is... he's actually a doctor, and he made the exosome theory pretty popular in the past year. Now I'm drawing a blank, but you know, I don't know if you want to share some of your sources as well. But as far as exosomes go, I believe they're supposed to be toxins that are excreted from the body at this microscopic level, and they have never ever been proven, as far as I understand, to be contagious. There have been tests to show if there has been contagion, and I believe that they've always come back without any proof of contagion.
You're right, because during the 1918 flu, they did experiments, and they took the saliva and the spit mm-hmm. and everything out of infected patients and gave them to healthy people, and not one of them came down with the virus. They took horses and put the feed bag over their face, and because I guess the horses were getting it too, it was crossing over, you know, they had the same thing, and none of the horses got sick. So I read those studies. And by the way, yeah. I studied homeopathy for 10 years and used it on my kids, and I very rarely use a regular doctor unless it's something, I'm not against antibiotics or that when you need them.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not foolish. I understand that. And you need those diagnostic skills of understanding the bodily functions like blood pressure and this and that to know when somebody's really sick, because you don't want to miss diagnosing pneumonia because you're going to give a vitamin or something. You have to attack that stuff, you know, very vigorously, or people can die. But I've done that. I've studied that for 10 years. I'm not an expert on anything other than that. I've used homeopathy. I do understand how it works. But I'm not any kind of virologist or anything like that. But, you know.
Well, incidentally, I recently dated an epidemiologist, and not just any epidemiologist, but she was the daughter of the CDC's head epidemiologist.
Oh, no kid.
Not right now, but mm-hmm. previously. And it was somewhat typical in the sense of, you know, she kind of knows what she does. And when I asked her if she knew how to isolate COVID, you know, she thought about it, And she replied, you know, if she had a protocol, she should be able to. So, you know, and it's that compartmentalization that I think all of us are familiar with, or at least, you know, our listeners might be. So the name I had in mind was Dr. Andrew Kaufman.
Oh, yes. Very good. I've heard his speech. Right. And he talks about Koch's postulates and all that. Right.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of my, that's where I fall back on is Koch's postulate. And the other name I wanted to throw out for a similar type of source would be Amanda Vollmer. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she's not an MD, but also very well researched and very articulate in this particular area. She would be, I think, an expert in the truther community in that regard. But I just wanted to make those points in terms of germ theory is still a theory, right? Kind of like a lot of other theories that are jammed down people's throats for medical school, for law school, you know, as opposed to the, you know, natural truth in a lot of cases, right? Natural law, common law, you know, homeopathic medicine versus allopathic medicine. Another point, I'm not on the Trump bandwagon. I love the NLA cause, but I caution the Trumping of Trump, right? The campaigning almost, or the celebration, the almost the borderline, you know, I'd like to point out the, it's almost like idol worship. I don't think that we, in a lot of cases, are in the position to offer testimony as to what Trump's intentions are or some other goings-on, right, that we don't have firsthand experience being able to speak about. And I just kind of...
I understand that, and I've gone back and forth with him. There were things that he did that I don't agree, and one of the things I don't agree and I don't understand is the fact that he fast-tracked this vaccine and he constantly brags about it. I wouldn't be bragging about it because people are going to die and they're going to hold him responsible for it because he said what a great thing it was and you should take it and blah, blah, blah. So that's a tough one. I mean, unless he did some kind of end run where they're really not giving the vaccine, it's a placebo. You know, if he made some kind of deal where they replaced it with something, because that's the kind of stuff he does. He wants to play this 3D chess, and I don't necessarily agree with all that, because I think a lot of this stuff, you know, that they may be doing too much of it in secret. Now, what I will say about Trump is you cannot use the mainstream media to figure out what he's done. They will not tell you. But I've seen some of the papers that he signed and the things that he's done, and I'll tell you that he's not much different than, you know, everybody said Alex Jones is a shill, and he's paid by this guy and that guy, and I don't know if he's ever taken money, but I'm going to tell you something. Alex Jones did more to red pill people than anybody else. If the other side had funded him, it would be, I'd give them the same answer that Christ gave to Pharisees when they said, "You use the devil." He says, "A house divided will not stand." You know, he's done so much damage to their cause, I can't believe that they're paying him. I mean, unless their counterintel is that good that they got some kind of plan. And I think the same thing goes for Trump. I don't agree what he always does. I don't think he has all the knowledge. He had a lot of evil people around him when he was working. He should have got rid of, you know, a lot of them. I think Jared Kushner is a double agent spy. He shouldn't even been in there. I mean, we got a lot of problems, don't get me wrong. But you know, regardless of who Trump is or what he does, I believe God takes people, whether they're good people or not, but he takes people to do a job because he knows that they can do them. I mean, he picked people throughout the ages to do things that were not the best people in the world, like Cyrus and Nebuchadnezzar. You know, he blessed them for things that they did for carrying out his will. But they did not necessarily get salvation for it because they were not really, you know, in squarely in his corner. But he used them because that's the only person that could have done the job or would have stepped up to the plate. And that might be the case with Donald Trump. I don't know. I'm hoping that he's better than that, but I don't know. And I, you know, the jury's still out as far as which way this is going to go. I don't worship him. I thought that it was a bad idea that we put him up in the first place because I knew all about the economic hitmen and the billionaires, and I thought anybody that's a billionaire should not be our president. Because by the time you get up into the billionaire status, normally you're usually sold your soul 10 times over. So I was against him as president in the beginning. But when I heard some of his speeches and some of the things he said, I said, well, you know, this flies in the face of. Now, is he a double agent? Could be. I guess we'll find out, won't we? And this whole virus thing is going to flush things out really quickly. It's going to be separate the wheat from the chaff. You're going to know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are, and you won't have to wonder, I don't think, because I think it's going to get to that point where there'll be no question in your mind whether he's operating in good faith or in bad faith. And yes, I know he's done some things that maybe he shouldn't have, and I think some of that was out of ignorance, you know. So that's my opinion anyway, and I agree, we shouldn't be worshiping him, but when he puts something good out, we should be supporting that good thing, because there's not too much good coming out of any political circle anywhere, I mean, even out of our judiciary. It's everything shot that we have right now. We are so far wounded, we're the walking wounded, we're like on life support. So I don't know where our salvation is going to come out of, and if the military intelligence and Trump is going to help us or not. You know, I mean, right now that's the only thing that we can hope in, because I don't know, I don't see anything else, you know.
Well, what we're doing, right? Like, isn't this the point, like, we the people?
Yes, that's true, except one thing. We have hit a brick wall as far as when it comes to opening the courts up and getting in the courts. We need somebody in our executive branch or in our Congress and in our Senate to open that door. And that's what I said. That's what I said when I said he's bringing the top down. There's going to be an opportunity for us to get up there, and it's going to have to happen in mass, but there's sort of a groundwork that's already been laid for us now due to Donald Trump. And I don't think that we could have done it before. They would not have accepted it. See, we're getting people that are disgusted with this system, like law enforcement, like bar lawyers that are ripping up their bar cards. It's happening right now. And so we've never had this before. So I believe there's a window of opportunity for us that, even with everything we know and everything we've done, as good as it looks and as good as it sounds, and it is good, that without opening that door, we would never be able to put it into practice. I think there's going to be an opportunity here in the next short months, a few weeks to a few months, where it comes to fruition. And there's going to be no doubt about it when it happens. And I think it's going to travel through, not the nation, but through the world like a lightning bolt. Because this evil is worldwide now. This pandemic is worldwide. This is a global fight of good against evil. So I expect miracles, because that's what happens. That's how God works when things get this bad. He's not going to save us unless we ask him to. And then when he does it, he's going to do it in such a way that we know that we didn't do it. That it's going to be a David and Goliath type thing. Look at David said, you know, he relied on God when he went in to kill Goliath. He gave God all the credit. And that's what's going to happen with this one, I think. That's my own spirituality, or whatever you want to call it. I think that there's going to be something that happens that enables us to open the door to do all these things we're talking about with the COSs and the common law grand juries, because basically what we're doing is what is in that biblical plan. You know, I truly believe that we are the new Israel, that they rejected it, and it's up to us now to give that government of the people, by the people, but under him as the supreme sovereign. And not, we can't depend on men, because men, what happens with men? You know that song about, you know, a kiss is just a kiss, a spot, and these things don't change. Men fall for the same reasons from generation to generation. The devil never has to change his method of operation, because we're all built the same, and eventually too much money and too much power and we corrupt. So unless we go to a higher power, I don't see us staying in that and producing what we need to produce.
I think the way you ended what you just said is how I would have replied to how you started what you just said, about how we hit a brick wall and we need somebody in the executive branch to make a difference. So I would agree with the latter, of what you said, in that we don't necessarily need someone else. Because we have God's armor, we understand God's will, and we can move forward with righteous initiative, and it can be infectious.
And I agree, and I think that's exactly how it's going to happen.
So the vast majority of the spirit of what you said, I agree with. Mm-hmm. There are a few points in which I differ. One, of course, was in, you know, we're helpless without Trump. I don't agree with that.
We're not without Trump, without God's help. Now, God could raise somebody that you disagree with like Trump and make him do the job that he needs to do to help us. That's the point I was trying to make. It's not really about the man Trump. It's about how much grace God gives him to act in his will.
Well,
right now, look, somebody else could step up to the plate, but, you know, this guy has moved through and been in such a position. To me, it seems like he has a mission to do, and that it is from God if he listens to his heart. Otherwise, somebody else is going to have to come in. Maybe you. I don't know. Maybe me. Maybe somebody from way out in left field. I have no idea. But whatever happens, I'm still going to consider it a miracle because we're so far from where we need to be that it's going to take a miracle to save us. You know, we're on life support, really.
So I do want to speak about a possible missing link for this difference that we seek. And I was trying to speak about this. In fact, I did speak about this with John on Monday, I believe, earlier this week. And it's a sensitive topic, right? Because it has to do with initiative, right? Taking righteous initiative. And due process. So, as Mr. Winters said earlier, right, it's about doing what needs to be done. I asked Mr. Darish if he was familiar with the Tenth Amendment Center, and there's a speaker, I don't know if it was Michael Meharry, I forget who it was, but he gave a great account of the story of Joshua Glover. Does that ring a bell with anyone?
I know the Tenth Amendment Center, but the Joshua Glover story, that's kind of familiar. I think I've read, or maybe I heard his speech.
To be brief, it had to do with an escaped slave out of Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
He made his way to Milwaukee. I think he was free for over a year before his previous owner came by with a Missouri sheriff, clocked him over the head and dragged him out into the streets. And actually, I think this was in Racine, and they put him in a jail in Milwaukee. This happened on a Friday, and over the course of a weekend, because this was during really strong abolitionist times, and you know, in the North, in Wisconsin, it was quite popular to be against slavery and vehemently against slavery. So thousands of people gathered. I think it was between 3,000 to 5,000, and literally broke him out of jail. The state, U.S., I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court ended up basically telling, and I forget the process, right? They basically said that the federal laws did not, you know, apply in Wisconsin with regards to abolition. So, in a sense, you know, I'm hinting at the due process threat of loss of freedom, right? So as long as these super criminals and the slippery slope of agents beneath them continue to operate with impunity, then they're going to continue to operate in systemic malfeasance. And that needs to stop. And passing the buck to someone else, a political authority, a religious authority, or some other authority, someone else that's not ourselves, I don't think that's the appropriate response. And I'm not saying we need to take individual righteous, you know, action with reckless abandon. I think it needs to be highly organized in the public eye. And we need to possibly, you know, and I'm throwing this out for, you know, criticism, but I want to throw in my two cents and say, like, hey, maybe we need to shift our focus a little bit and you know, look at each instance and say, like, well, how can we take some of these bricks out of this wall? And we can use due process and be like, hey, we understand, for example, there was a very popular police shooting within the year, right, or murder, right, the knee to the neck, right? And people came to the house of this police officer, right? For whatever purposes, you know, they came to this person's house, and there were other police forming a wall, right? Now, this person was not in custody, right? But this wall was formed by people. They weren't bricks, right? Not literal bricks. They were people, at least humans, maybe not people the way we use it on, you know, in terms of at law, you know, but they were forming a barrier. And if one of us was there, perhaps, or let's say if I was there, maybe, and I went up or was able to convince the group to be like, hey, why don't we find out who these officers are, right? And now we can sue them, right? Because they are unlawfully mitigating the arrest of somebody who just killed someone. So a few months later, 6 months later, maybe a year later, their assets can be lost, right? And maybe because it's, you know, so unlawful what they did, maybe they can even lose freedom. Now, of course, that's difficult when we can't even get into court, right? But at some point, you know, we need to start making progress. And I don't know, I definitely don't know all the answers. I know much less than the vast majority of the hosts who are speaking on this show every day or every week. But I just like to throw that little idea out there, and that's kind of my two cents.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to say that there is another thing that's going on right now that is sweeping across the nation and the world. And it is a common law movement, and the guy that's doing it, and he's very successful, you got to hear him talk. As a matter of fact, that's the thing I want to play. And his name is Christopher James. And he did an interview on SGT, and he's talking about this corporation that starts with the birth certificate of usurping who we are and turns us into a corporation, a non-man. And he has found a way to fix that and get in the courts. He has opened up 4 common law courts and one. And he's operating out of Canada, but he's going around the world, and he has cases in Australia and a couple different, and he's engineering it so they're all hitting at the same time. And he shuts these judges down because he comes in as a real man. What he does is he fixes his birth certificate and he sets them straight. And as far as there's 4 questions that they have to answer if they're going to have control over you. And he tells you what those 4 questions are. And the main thing is, you know, who are you? Who is this that's coming after me, and who am I? You know, do you have a verified claim against me? Do you have an actual thing that I did wrong that you can come after me for, you know, under common law? And they never do. You know what I mean? And so if they don't have those 4 things, then they can't proceed against you. The only reason they proceed against us is because, just like when we were in the courts with the Malheur Refuge and all that stuff with the BLM and the farmers out west, and they kept, when the guys would come in and say, well, according to the Constitution, the judge would say, there's no discussion of the Constitution in here, because that judge knows that the Constitution cannot operate in her court, because they are not constitutional courts. They might as well be McDonald's running it. You know, if McDonald's came out with an edict saying you have to stay home, would you listen to them? Well, these courts and these Congress and everything that they're doing, they're called global service corporations. They have no jurisdiction over anybody. And once you learn how to pierce that veil, they will fall in a day. And it seems that whatever he's done, they have not been able to fight against it. So we're going to learn some of that, and we're going to apply it, I'm sure. And we're going to be using it at NLA to pierce the veil. I mean, that's my hope anyway. We're going to look into it some more. But I'm very excited about it because he seems to be able to get in there and hold them to a common law people's court.
I doubt that in the sense that he's holding them personally accountable. I doubt that he's holding the agencies that are empowering them or giving them the color of power.
He never sues the agency or the government. He sues the people.
Maybe we should consider a different approach. You know, I think that these bureaucrats or these magistrates or whatever these people wearing these robes are doing, they are shooting fish in a barrel because the fish are not shooting back.
Right.
And you might, you know, and when you have the basics of common law and how to open a court of record and hold a court of record, if you know your paperwork, and, I mean, you do need to, I think, lose a pound of flesh in this day and age to do so, definitely in Chicago. You know, I opened my first in 2015. And, you know, once you have that down, sure, you can get away. Maybe you won't get shot in that barrel. It won't be as easy, that's for sure. But they're still going to be shooting the schools that are right near us, our peers, right? And that just needs to stop. We need to do more than just avoid getting shot. We need to stop the shots and hold them accountable for taking them.
Well, his plan is to go in there with 100 police officers on each side and make the claim and make the arrest.
Who has custody of the police officers?
Who has custody of the police officers?
Custody is what we need to focus on. Mm-hmm. If we don't focus on the custodians of the infrastructure of our society, then we're dealing with the symptoms and not the root cause, just like our criticism with allopathic medicine.
Well, what the police officers don't necessarily understand, you know, they take an oath to the Constitution. They are on one end, a police officer, his police duties are to uphold the statutes, which basically have nothing to do with us as men. Statutes control corporations and people that work for corporations. The other part of the police officer is being a peace officer. And as a peace officer, that's where he upholds the common law for you and I. That's what he's supposed to be doing. And that's why you see some of these officers in these other countries, like in England and that, taking their vest off and joining the people, because they're becoming peace officers at that moment.
But are they, you know, we're not, I don't know exactly. Like, I've seen some videos of officers, I think in France, putting down badges and, you know, putting it on the internet. But where are the custodians of the police department? Who's running the fraternal order of police? Like, why are there, you know, Masonic symbols, you know, on all of the infrastructures and all of the municipalities, right? Where are, you know, what about the think tanks? What about where half or most of the money of the, you know, of the nation goes to, right, in terms of the military? Like, what's going on with those hierarchies?
That's all that corporation. You're right. You're absolutely right.
It's all done behind closed doors. And there's something that John said, Mr. Darius said in one of the early meetings, and I'm sure he said it throughout these meetings over the years, and I wish I had it written, but it was something to the effect of how, you know, they're operating behind closed doors, and we need to bring those operations to light. One thing that I've noticed, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, but one thing that's happened by default for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years perhaps, is that we as a species, as social creatures, have been limited to trusting or allowing or acquiescing to a select few or just a few who run governments. But in the last 50 or less years, we no longer need to do that because we have technology that can overcome some of those pitfalls, some of the shortcomings of closed-door meetings. We have audio recordings, we have video recordings, and we have the internet. We can open source government as a matter of law, and any mitigation thereof can be considered a criminal act, punishable, right, whatever the appropriate punishment may be. But the point is, I think this would be one of the focuses that NLA or other organizations should do as a principle of law, just as much as speech should be free, so should the public domain be free, visible, and audible without middlemen on the fly for, right, the good of all, right, to promote God's will.
Look, when we go into court and they won't let us videotape it, what's up with that? It's a public hearing.
They're operating by Babylonian city law,
Exactly. It's not God's law.
Does that have, that does not have standing upon people like you and I.
That's right.
If there's enough people, we can stand not only with the weight of our physical presence, but also on law, on God's law, on being right. And that has weight.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, we've done both. And when you come into court with a whole bunch of people, the judges get very, very sheepish because that's the one thing that they fear is the people amassing against them because they're political animals or whatever. But they acquiesced to us taping a court case because there were so many people there. They didn't want to be the bad guy, so to speak. Or they, or for some reason, I know that when you go there with a mass of people, that you get more done because they can't control everybody and they can't intimidate everybody. So that is a lesson.
I'm in the Midwest. I'm in Chicago. I would love to support like-minded people. Of course, you know, genuine efforts. You know, and sometimes I might need it. Might need support.
And but, we have a court watcher system where you can call other NLA members in your area when you get called to court, and they come in with their pens and pads, and they sit there and they observe and take notes. And then at the end of whatever your hearing is, then they give you a signed sworn affidavit of what they heard, and they're death afraid of that.
Oh, definitely.
They're death afraid of it. First of all, they don't know who these people are. They look like attorneys. You're in there with your little notepad taking notes. But then when they find out that you're a court watcher, listen, if just for that, they get on their best behavior.
Because definitely.
There's a record being taken. So we've done some of that. We need to do more of that because it works so well, and it works instantaneously just about.
Well, yeah. And I think people should do that individually as well. And I made a record of doing that for years, and it's just good practice. You know, you take note of what's going on, and you definitely impress the other people in court. But at the same time, you don't always keep them on good behavior. I've definitely flushed out some heinous behavior by, you know, holding them to task.
Yeah, but at least if you got three or four or five people writing down what's going on and then signing a sworn affidavit, which is the basis of all law, they're scared of that. Because now that person could take those affidavits and put it in the case when they go to sue that judge as evidence. Well, here's six people that were in the hearing that heard him say this or that, the treasonous statements that he was making. That's pretty hard for that judge.
If I can rewind back to another point that you brought up, and you know, I wanted to make a note that I don't support Trump, and I don't have, I can't say that I don't have doubt, but I feel like I really don't have doubt with regards to Trump, and I definitely feel like he's absolutely a double agent. You know, his lineage, and I don't really want to harp on Trump.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you over it, except for I've read some of what he's put out there, and it baffles me.
Supposedly.
Well,
ghostwriters. There are ghostwriters.
Well, yeah, but the papers that he's submitting and the executive orders that he's writing, I don't care if somebody else wrote them, they got his signature on. Guess who's God's going to hold responsible for that? I don't care who wrote it, who signed it, who's administering it. He's responsible. It's like me. If I tell my kid, go ahead, write your school note, and I sign it, is it not valid because my son wrote it and I signed it? No, he did my wishes, and I signed off on it. So anything.
I want to move from Trump because I feel like he's such a magnet for the conversation.
Yeah, okay. I know. Go ahead.
So someone else that I wanted to to express my lack of confidence in would be Jones. Jones definitely, you know, I think he's admitted, in fact, I know that I've heard him admit that he comes from deep CIA ties and military intelligence. You know, he's...
I've heard all that stuff.
Yeah, so...
And I don't necessarily doubt it, but they're pretty foolish putting him in there when they did, unless they changed him later on, because he was one that brought stuff... I mean, I'm a pretty awake person. My parents were both John Birch members. I knew what the Trilateral Commission was, what's the other one there?
CFR.
The CFR was when I was 12 years old.
Sure.
So, he brought a lot of stuff out early on that I can't see the cabal wanting it out there, unless they could have got to him because they tend to, you know, they're going to focus on somebody that gets popularity and they know how to compromise them. And once they do that, they own them, and that's what they own every judge, and that's what Soros has helped happen with all our prosecutors and our officials. They all get made, like they're made men like the mob, they'll leave them alone until they need them to do a certain thing, and then they lean on them and say, right. Well, we're going to release those pictures. But so, yeah, that's what we're up against. And you can even have a good guy that goes in and gets ruined. It can happen.
Of course. And you know? there's three important persons that I think we may have misnomers about in terms of perhaps being corrupted. Mm-hmm. And one would be, I think, the United States. Another would be Trump and Jones. I think that from the outset, from the establishment of these persons, you have lineages of systemic hegemony, right? You have with the United States, upwards of, 100 million natives murdered, and a Masonic country, right, started or nation, which, so this is why I say it's not necessarily infiltrated, but maybe the Pope allowed it, and these Maltese crosses went over the Atlantic, 100 million died, and we have a new Atlantis, a new system of hegemony, right? So, and moving on to Trump, right, lineage, Jones lineage, so I think these, in a sense, have, from the outset, had agendas, hegemonic agendas, and roles to play, right? And the Bible warns us of the disguises of the devil, right?
Yeah.
So that's my opinion, right? Like,
And I'm not going to argue that because I don't know. And I have an open mind to this stuff, and nothing surprises me today. Nothing. You got to be numb to this stuff because if you throw all your eggs in one basket, that basket can flip over in a heartbeat. So you always have to hold back a little bit and kind of question, you know, what you're seeing. And so I agree with that. But I want to get moving. We got a couple other people. We've had a lot of time.
Appreciate it.
So we can continue at another time. I mean, I can see that we have analytical and kind of like minds, and it's good because steel sharpens steel, and that's what this is about.
Well, thank you very much. Have a good
day. Okay. Yeah, thanks. Okay, Ed from Arizona, go ahead. You've been unmuted.
Wow. My name's Ed from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman that was just on made it sound like there was a murder taking place with a guy's knee on a guy's neck. That's bullshit. I'm sorry.
I've heard all that stuff too.
So I don't put up with that. I don't put up with somebody talking down on something he's wrong about. And this body of wall of people, he's talking down on that. I think the wall of people was a marvelous thing.
Uh-huh.
So sorry. I disagree with this guy. So, you know, you got to listen and you got to think. And I hear him trying to lead me in a direction I'm not ready to go.
Well, as far as this whole Floyd business goes, I kind of looked into it, and it's very emotional and stuff, and you got to be careful what you say. But if you look into the background, both of Floyd and that officer, you'll find out that they work together in the same club, one as a bouncer, one inside, one outside. It's like they had to know each other. There's a lot more to this. I think the whole thing was a put-up deal because they needed it at the time. You know, I think there's things you're going to find out about that on both sides, that they were both actors doing a job, in a so to speak. And I even hear some stuff that they say he's not even dead, that they're spotting. I mean, you want to talk about conspiracy theories, you know. But, you know, they also said that he was full of fentanyl and everything else, that he had a heart attack. I don't know. And I don't care, to tell you the truth. I mean, that's still not a reason to rip a country apart, you know, saying that it was a racist thing, because I don't believe that there is that kind of racism in this country. I think that most people in this country get along with their neighbors, white and black. I find very little racism when I walk through. I'm not denying that you can't find it somewhere in some place, but I don't believe that it's as prevalent as they say. And even these different black people in government, like Candace Owens and that, have denied it and said that you're just using the black man as your platform. So basically, they're the racists because they're using them to push agenda, and that's all that whole thing was. It was an agenda because they need rioting and they need this civil unrest right now, and it's all designed to fit hand in hand. Look at this whole virus thing and the economy and the voter fraud and all. It's all a big plan to fit together. They've even done dry runs of it. And they're using the same language that they used in their exercises to prepare for this, right down to the tweets and the hashtags on Twitter that they're using. They all that stuff was done was run through 3 years ago. But what does that mean? I don't, you know, and I understand where you are with this whole thing and that cop and George Floyd and that, and then of course later on it came out that he didn't die from suffocation. But I'm telling you, the whole thing stinks. I don't even want to touch it because you can't believe what you see. I mean, they have technology today. I could show you, you know, killing the what's her name, the one that died in the car accident there, the Queen. And it wouldn't be you, but they would swear at you. You know what I mean? They got CGI and stuff today that they're using on us. Because how could you believe anything you see on the television? It's all fake. It's all scripted. And they have technology that I can make you say, and I make it look like you're saying anything I want you to say. So we have to be very careful. And so, yeah, it's hard to take a position and hold to it very fast, because a lot of times the rug is pulled out from under you, and that's all I'll say. As far as I'm concerned, the jury's still out on all of this stuff, and I think it is going to come to a head, and I think it says that the hidden things will no longer be hidden, and I think we're in that age. I think all this stuff is going to come out, and we're going to see the truth all at once, and it's going to be very traumatic for some people to learn that they've been lied to all their lives. And so that's why this fella that this Christopher James, he goes right back to how they do it in the beginning with the birth certificate, and they take control of you, and then they keep doing it time and again. Then the driver's license, and this makes these guys that are running these corporations, these secret societies that basically run the big corporations that run the government. It's a cabal, and it's almost a religious ceremony. But meanwhile, they're abusing us, and they're treating us like cattle, and they know it. The guys on top know it. And they're comfortable with doing the things that they do to us because they're told that, well, you know, it's a contract. You know, when, you know, they give us this, and they take that. And nothing could be further from the truth. It's a lie. When they're, you know, when they're treating us like we're a creation of the state, a fiction of the state, because that's all we are, and that's why we can't get justice. And that's what that judge does up there. He holds us to something that is beyond what our rights should be. And he has no jurisdiction whatever to do what he does, and we let them get away with it. So once we understand, look, it's the emperor has no clothes again. You know, once we realize that they have no power over us and they have no jurisdiction over us, and we go into those courts and we state that, and we go in mass and do that, they're going to fall. They're going to fall like the walls of Jericho fell when they blew the horns, the shofars. So, I don't know. It's going to be soon, I think. But thanks, Ed.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Kevin's from Queens, New York, in the heart of New York City. Are you there, Kevin? I can't hear you. Is that you? Kevin, are you there? Hello? I don't hear you. I don't know if your mic is open. All right, we're very late. I'm going to go into, because I can't hear you, I'm going to go to Veronica.
Hi, Gerard. How are you doing?
Good. How's it going?
It's going fine, and I saw a teaching moment early on, and I'd just like to bring it to your attention because it really goes along with everything that's being said.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when John had read the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence,
mm-hmm.
he did not read the first, and the first has the solutions to all of our problems.
Okay.
Okay, shall I read it?
Go ahead. Don't keep
okay.
it.
Okay, when in the... Say again?
No, go ahead.
Oh, a lot of people don't even know that there is a first paragraph anymore. All they do is just go directly to the second. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Well, there were people in that assembly. Some of them had a word to transition from the first to the second paragraph, and they said, it's because we hold these truths to be self-evident. And others were probably thinking, well, although we hold these truths to be self-evident, our creator, you know, for whom governments are organized, right? Mm-hmm. Or however it's written in there, okay? Their creator were the charters that allowed them to set up shop here in the colonies, not the creator of the universe. So going back to the first paragraph that is rarely read anymore, and I had to memorize it when I was in school, and of course you know who I am, so, and how old I am. Anyway, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to do what? We're in a course of human events today, aren't we?
Absolutely.
So when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to, and put a number one there in your mind, and when, and I, you know, I strongly encourage everyone on the call to memorize this, because I get some really, really wonderful response from people who are talking about, oh, what are we going to do about this? Oh, you can't fight City Hall, and so on and so forth. But when I read this to them and insert the 1, 2, 3, the problems are here, and it's discussed, and the remedy is given. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to, number one, it's a choice, dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another. Today it's the Democrats and the Republicans who are the political bands. Back in the 1700s, it was the Whigs and the Tories. And back in Yeshua's day, it was the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Correct?
That's right.
Nothing has changed.
No.
And then it goes on to say, and to, and I'm putting a two in here, in number two, assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. This is a wonderful course of human events that we're on, with the mask and the vaccination and this, that, and the other thing, because as you guys said, it is the body that builds up its own immunities if we just keep it in health. So instead of, you know, chopping at the branches and the twigs of this tree of liberty, what has to be done is getting at the root of the problem and changing the soil in which it grows. And of course, that goes along with in our communities. Because the next step here, okay, we have the two choices. We can stick with the political bans or we can get rid of them. We can assume amongst the powers of the earth or we can go back to the political bans or, you know, however we want to do this. But the third part of this says, that a decent respect, to have a decent respect to the opinions of mankind, because that requires that they should, number three, declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We have to declare the causes which impel us to the separation in a factual, meaningful way. Anyway, that's my lesson for today.
I think that that's what we have done with our record. That we mm-hmm. have declared that, and they have it, and they have no excuse. And just like our forefathers said, we have demonstrated, we've remonstrated, we've begged you, we've done this, and to no avail.
Well, the thing is that we have not been at this present course of human events. And it does become necessary, but people have got to know this is right here. It is our permission that was given to us in 1776 when they sat down and they wrote that first paragraph. Nothing has changed. The same issues today that were then, that were in Yeshua's day. And what did he do? He overturned the tables of the money changers, didn't he?
That's right.
And that gets back to no representation since the 17th Amendment. Somebody was mentioning that. Was that you or was that John that was mentioning that?
It must have been John, because I came in.
Well, anyway, the 17th Amendment, what that did, that essentially breached Article 1, Section 3. I didn't hear John mention Article 1, Section 3. Article 1, Section 3 said that two senators were to be selected from amongst the senators that were already directly elected by the people to represent them in the state. So what that essentially did, Gerard, is it nullified the 10th Amendment. We have had no representation in Congress and for the advice and consent that is given by the senators since the 1913 when the Federal Reserve System came in and the 17th Amendment passed.
Yeah, these are all things we need to do.
Exactly, and the thing is that I strongly encourage the NLA to start going after the breaches of contract that have been perpetrated on us, especially since 1913. If what that is, by their own definition of wheel conspiracy, is a wheel conspiracy. It is the Federal Reserve System that energizing the system because with the currency, okay? So the current that is energizing the system is being done by the Federal Reserve, which around 1970, when silver was taken out of the coin, that breached Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution. So there's another breach of contract. Since then, what has happened is that they are getting paid in the courts with a foreign currency, a currency foreign to that which they swear to uphold and defend.
Well, all this stuff is coming to a head, and basically, they're broke. That's what's happening right now. And this whole pandemic thing with the mask and stuff, that's only going to serve to bring this to a head sooner.
Exactly. And encouraging people. Right. And encouraging people to memorize that first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to do what? Come on, Gerard. Dissolve the political bands, right, which have connected them with another. And number two, what are we supposed to do? Assume amongst the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle us. And number three, have a decent respect for the opinions of mankind. Declare the causes which impel us to the separation. One, two, three.
Yeah.
Okay?
It's simple, isn't it? One, two, three.
It is. I mean, they studied, you know, all governments throughout history, and the Bible was their textbook. And so right there, you know, everything was right there. And as for the vaccines and the terrible stuff that it's doing, you know, their only competition is the seed of Abraham. It says in many places of the Bible that through the seed of Abraham, all nations shall be blessed. And in 2009, when Obamacare was being discussed and the ACA was coming into being, in the New York Times, as well as our local paper here, what it had in there was Wall Street investing in death. The younger the policyholder dies, the more money the investors make. And that was in September of 2009. You can look online and you could just type in Wall Street invest in death. And it will come up.
Now, this whole eugenics thing is part of that.
Absolutely.
With Bill Gates, and that they're just beside themselves. And you know, this when I get into this Christopher James, there's four questions that you can that, and basically it's only two really. What it comes down, just like when Christ says, "What's the law?" and he broke the Ten Commandments down into two, basically. And when you go to court, there's two questions that they won't be able, that they cannot answer you. And when they can't answer that, they just showed that they have no jurisdiction. And it's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
So he has classes on Thursday night, on different nights, Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. So anyway, I'll bring it out and we'll study it and we'll see how we can put it into process and how we can use it and maybe team up with these people, because that's what we need to do. We need these different groups that are out there that are doing good things. We need to not reinvent the wheel, and we need to find out what works, and then we need to team up, because we need critical mass. And the only way we're going to get it is if we team up together as we the people.
And I do believe, you know, Gerard, is that the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence may be the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has the same footing.
They
have choices, and there's a closing argument right there. You know, declare the causes which impel. That's the contract. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, with that, I yield.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And with that, I think we're done. Wow. And usually we leave people. That's good. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. And see you here next week, same time, and good meeting. Bring your questions and your comments, and that's what we do here Monday nights. God bless.